Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Monday edition of the program. Hopefully everybody had a decent weekend. We got a good lineup coming up today. Ryan Divish will join us at 3:30 today. The Professor John Clayton at 4 o'clock. Lincoln Kennedy, former UW standout, member of the Oakland Raiders, will join us at 5 o'clock. And then at 5:30, we'll go live to the Jay Inslee press conference just to keep everybody locally up to speed on what's happening. As we've said, as much as we want to be a diversion for everybody out there, we do want to keep everybody up to date on what is happening out there. So the governor will take to the podium at 5:30. We will send it out there live and see what the very latest is from the governor. And hopefully everybody has had a good, safe weekend. Things haven't really changed much for me. There wasn't a ton to do. I kind of hung out, watched a lot of there was a UFC marathon on ESPN, so I went through and watched a bunch of cool fights and specials there. Got the Harley out a couple days in a row. Outside of that, I don't know. Jim, you went to a golf course. I saw you tweeting about that.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I was a little torn about that too, because golf courses are on Jay Inslee's allowed list, and yet, you know, I was still thinking, okay, I'm not so sure if I should be doing this, and had mixed responses on Twitter about it. And I decided to go. I went to Twin Lakes on Saturday and Druids Glen yesterday. And both courses taking really good precautions to keep the social distancing and keeping everything clean and doing everything they could and making sure everyone was 6 feet apart. And at Newcastle, they had a system where you called in to get your tee times, you gave your Visa card over the phone, also with the range balls. You do the same thing, and they give you the PIN number to get your range balls. And then once you went to the range, they had every other bay was closed off so you could keep your distance. But I think, you know, what's coming tonight is we're going to find out about a possible quarantine situation, and I'm sure that golf is going to be off the table. And so my kids are out playing today, but I think that's probably going to end maybe as of midnight tonight. And outside of that, I probably did a lot of what you guys were doing. Just, I was watching some old golf tournaments on the Golf Channel. I watched a cornhole competition, which was actually pretty entertaining. It was a women's team competition, and they were really good at it. I watched some wrestling with Randy Orton last night and Batista and Daniel Bryan out of Aberdeen, the local favorite here, and some Australian rules football. So it was a mixed bag for me this weekend, but it's, you know, surreal is a word that gets thrown out a lot, but that's the way it felt this weekend, and it kind of felt like we were in a movie of some sort. It just doesn't really seem real what's going on right now.
Hey, Dave, before we get to what you did, just want to give Seahawks fans an update. Just seeing a tweet from Adam Schefter. It says the Seahawks are sending Washington a fifth-round pick in exchange for cornerback Quentin Dunbar, per source. So the Redskins trade a fifth-round pick, a five, for quarterback Kyle Allen and get back a five for Dunbar. So there you go. Seahawks have acquired a cornerback, Quentin Dunbar, in exchange for a fifth-round pick. What do you think, Dave? Familiar with him at all?
I'm just looking him up, and Quentin Dunbar, he's a wide receiver? Is that what we're talking about?
No, cornerback.
Are we talking about a different guy?
Corner.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, the only Quentin Dunbar I'm coming up with here is actually a receiver. At least that's how he's listed, but anyway, we'll see. Maybe there's that was an early tweet there by Schefter.
Yeah, about a minute.
Yeah, it's funny. He's listed as a wide receiver, but he has defensive stats. So never mind. Yeah, he's got 9 interceptions, and he's got a sack. So, yeah, he's going to be going into his sixth year.
Well, he was a wide receiver at Florida.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, that's right. So anyway, yeah, they converted him, and, you know, the Seahawks aren't they don't shy away from converting guys from one side of the ball to the other. And, you know, maybe he was like a Will Disley type, because Will was a defensive end. But, Yeah, I just think in general they need to improve their defense, and we've seen a lot of signings as far as offensive line goes, which I think is wise, considering, you know, Russell getting sacked that many times, what, 54, including the playoffs, I believe. So, yeah, just generally, you know, getting guys that can cover, because, you know, that was a little bit of a problem. I still feel like they didn't, you know, really trust the guys that they drafted, but, you know, they're always good this time of year, sort of filling in the rest of their roster. I mean, is this guy maybe going to be a starter, you know? We don't really know. They've traded fifth rounders away for backup quarterbacks and safeties. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But hopefully that is something that really is able to help out the Seahawk defense.
Yeah, it's and you guys can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is the text number. Texters are in fine form, Dave. 360 says, I found cornerback instantly. You are old. So they're taking shots right out of the gate. A beautiful Monday, so yeah. Everybody must be feeling good.
I guess navigating the internet, I like to say without a T, is not my strong suit. But it does say on Pro Football Reference, Quentin Dunbar, position, wide receiver, there, okay? So whoever that was from, I'm, what, 206? Go look it up. Go check it out. But no, he does... He definitely does have defensive stats, so just a little mistake there. And as Jim said, you know, he played wide receiver at Florida.
Yeah, he looks like he's disgruntled about his contract situation, and so maybe that led to the trade and being a fifth-round pick. It looks like he's a better player than you would equate with a fifth-rounder in return.
Well, they're making moves, and for people that wanted, you know, Trey Flowers to have some competition, then there you go. There's a cornerback with somewhat of a resume coming in. So we'll see what happens there. It'll be, you know, if anything, if Trey Flowers wins out, you've got some quality depth. They gave up a fifth rounder. All right, I'm at peace with that. I like the deal. I'm okay with that one. Still want to see, you know, we'll get deeper into what they've done and what they haven't done to this point as we continue with Clowney and everything else that's gone on, but. On the surface, I look at that and go, okay, you didn't have really any depth there. We talked about that. So that minimum, if he's not a starter, they provided some experienced quality depth with the resume.
Yeah, and he had his best year last year, 4 interceptions, and he's also 6'2", 202 pounds. So, you know, and that's the same formula with Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman was a receiver at Stanford and then played, I think it was just his senior year, or maybe junior and senior year. I just remember him not being
not a very good one, according to you, right?
No. I mean, I don't mind saying this because he became such a great pro. I mean, that's the way you want to do it, right? You don't want to be great in college and then just sort of okay in the NFL. I'd throw myself in that category. But, you know, he did it the right way, and he was such a good player to me that it was just shocking to me that, you know, he had the kind of career he had at Stanford. So I say it as a compliment, not to dog him as far as Richard Sherman goes as a Stanford guy, but, you know, there was lots of complaining. I remember Aaron Levine at Q13, when they drafted him, we were like, what are the Seahawks thinking, man? So, but, yeah, that turned out all right for him. But, yeah, Quentin Dunbar, and looks like he fits that mold, you know, that 6'2", 202 pounds. I don't know what the professor will tell us, what their arm length is that they want, but I'm sure he's one of those kind of lanky guys that they like playing out at corner.
Dave, what did you end up doing this weekend?
Dave.
What did I do? I did stuff around the house. I did my yard. My yard has never looked better. I washed the outside windows. What else? Yeah, we just kind of hung around, my wife and I and my daughter. Didn't really do that much. I think I mentioned to you guys in an email that we sat out on our front porch at sunset, and it was really nice, and just kind of, you know, just trying to find ways to occupy ourselves. Binge watched a little bit of Ozark on Netflix, and I don't know if you guys watch that show, but yeah, it's been cool.
I was just looking back at Quentin Dunbar, and you're right, Dave. 4 interceptions, 2 off of Daniel Jones, 1 off of your favorite quarterback down there in Miami, Josh Rosen, and another off of Jeff Driskel. And he comes to the Seahawks in the last year of a 3-year deal that he signed in 2018. And so it's a low-cost deal right now because he's only making $10.5 million over the 3 years, so an average of a little over what, like $3.5 million, something like that. But as I said earlier, disgruntled about the situation. But yeah, I like the move. I was wondering if they were going to get a free agent cornerback at some point, and they ended up trading for one. There's a lot of free agent cornerbacks still available. We can talk to Clayton about that at 4 o'clock. A lot of wide receivers available too in free agency, but it appears that they might be looking for a third receiver in the draft as opposed to free agency.
Did we lose Bob? Sounds
no,
like
I'm here. They're having issues trying to get the proper connection here. I don't know what's happened. I haven't touched this thing since Friday, so I don't know what's gone on, but I think they're trying to do something behind the scenes here. But go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so anyway, the interesting thing, I did a little hit with Q13 last night, and, you know, we talked a little bit last week about Jadeveon Clowney and how, you know, it's kind of bad luck for him, you know, not having a nine and a half sack season. But man, it just, again, I can't say enough the kind of football player he is. I mentioned to you guys in the email, I'm watching the Pittsburgh game. I'm not sure why they had that on. Maybe it was because of him, but they talked a lot about Jadeveon Clowney. And, you know, he had a pass that he knocked down. I only got halfway through it. And then he had a pass rush where, I don't know if you guys remember, early on Brandon Jackson got a sack. And Brandon's from Pittsburgh, and it was a big deal. But basically, Clowney forced that sack. He was getting double-teamed, and then he ended up getting single-blocked. But just the way he was trying to reach around and his arms up in the air and everything, it made Roethlisberger pull the ball down. So and now we're saying that, you know, maybe they get Clowney for like 13 to 15 million in that range. And it's amazing to me. I think the good news is the Seahawks are going to get a bargain, but you know, for Clowney, I'm sure he's not happy at all with that, but don't blame the team that signed you and gives you the money. But it's very strange to me. It doesn't make sense to me that, that he hasn't gone already.
I retweeted something earlier today from Pro Football Talk that said that the Dolphins had interest in him. Now, the Dolphins originally wanted him before the Seahawks picked him up, and he didn't want to play in Miami. But according to the story, they approached him with a contract offer somewhere in the neighborhood of $17 to $18 million a year, and he turned that down. So I'm wondering if, in fact, that's true. And again, that's according to sources and everything. But if that's true, and he ends up signing with Seattle for somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million, I wonder if he's going to be kicking himself.
Yeah, I would think so, Bob. I mean, but if you're him, you went into this thinking that you were going to make at least 20, if not 21 or 22. You were hoping to be the highest paid defensive end, and yet it's got to be just shocking to him. I don't know what's going on, the conversations between him and his agent, but clearly the general managers, I mean, it just seems like it's a combination of factors, the coronavirus not allowing teams to bring him in for a physical. And if you're going to be paying this kind of money for a player like this, and I know you can have contingency plans and you can put an asterisk on it, you know, barring or pending a physical, those types of things. But boy, I'm sure that he's more than surprised, probably flabbergasted at this point, because going into free agency, he was one of the top two or three guys overall, regardless of position that teams were looking at. And now we're in the third wave of free agency and still no signing in sight. I can't believe those numbers of 13 to 14 million. And of course, I've never been one to think that, boy, the Seahawks need to have Clowney back. I guess you probably already know how I feel about that, because they weren't that good with him. And I'm just going, why would you try that all over again? And yet at this point, if you could get him for 13 or 14 million, that'd be quite a, you'd be getting bang for your buck with Jadeveon Clowney. And the other options you have, We know about those too. We've gone over there. Over all these options, Matthew Judon from Baltimore in a trade, the Ravens having franchised him. We know about Ngakoue down in Jacksonville. They could go the trade route with him if those two players are in fact available. And then your plan C, I guess, is Everson Griffin there in Minnesota.
Yeah, I liked your idea with that, Jim. I think, don't you feel like if you got Bruce Irvin, you're able to sign Jadeveon Clowney and you bring Griffin in, who's a great football player. I mean, I know he's getting on in age, but, You know, and then the other thing is, you know, we talked about this last week. Maybe the thing with Clowney, maybe his health is a bigger risk than we all think. You know, maybe the off-season surgery didn't go as planned, or it's going to take a little bit longer. But, yeah, it's just amazing to me where, you know, and I don't look at it. I mean, you have a point, definitely, Jim. I mean, their defense wasn't good. So, you know, not signing someone from that defense, I guess, makes sense. But to some people, anyway, but I, just when I watch him play individually, again, the stats just don't tell the story with that guy. He's so difficult to block. So, man, that could end up working out really well for them. But again, you know, you worry, even if you do sign Clowney for $13 million, what about the health? I mean, maybe, you know, he has to miss a bunch of games. And like I said, maybe that surgery didn't go the way they planned. It's definitely, you know, for him, got to be frustrating that these things are all sort of piling up against him. And again, we talked about the timing of the season that he had, and he couldn't have had a worse season, I think. Compared, you know, maybe go back to his first couple years, but if you look at the numbers, he couldn't have had a worse season. I mean, he hasn't had this low of a sack total since his second year in the league. So in his rookie year, he only played in 4 games. His second year, he played in 13, started in 9, and he had 4.5 sacks. But then it went 6 sacks, 9.5 sacks, 9 sacks, and then last year, only 3, and he started in 11 games.
Hey, what are you guys talking about?
You know, going back to Dunbar, I've done some further research on him. Would you like to hear the results of that research?
Oh, man, I can't wait to hear Jim's research.
Yeah, well, here's the extent of the research. It's from the text line from the 360. Dunbar was the number 2 ranked Pro Football Focus cornerback in 2019, and he had an 87 grade out of 100, so that's pretty encouraging when you see those kind of numbers and you look at what his salary is at $3.5 million. And again, he's not happy about it and wants to renegotiate. But still, to get a guy like that, a caliber of a player like that for a fifth rounder, it looks like a steal.
I guess this is a time we'd choose to believe in the numbers that Pro Football Focus puts out there, right? We tend to pick and choose when they're valid and when we go, those guys are just guessing. They don't really know. But in this instance, I think I like them.
Yeah, there you go. That's we're gonna love up Pro Football Focus for that rating. But yeah, 4 picks. I mean, who had the most picks last year? The guy from New
six,
England,
Stephon Moore. Gilmore. No, Stephon Gilmore was tied with a couple others, I think, at 6.
Yeah, and I think did Sherm have something like that?
He had 3,
or 5, or
he had 3.
Yeah. So same as Trey Flowers. So
that's exactly right. I mean, he's just as good as Trey Flowers.
Yeah, that's right. So, but yeah, I mean, look, this is a great example of a guy once again as, you know, having good timing. You know, he has his best year by far, his entire career right before this happens. But you know, we'll see what they're picking up. Is there any details from that tweet as far as his contract or, you know, what he is, how much he's making or anything like that?
No, nothing to this point.
Well, just in 2018,
confirming the trade.
Yeah, 2018, he signed a 3-year deal with the Redskins for $10.5 million total.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, we'll see what
happens. I like there. It. I like it. Pro Football Focus made me feel good about it, so we'll talk more about that. Again, the professor will join us at 4 o'clock today. We'll get his take on it, but right now, let's take 2.
It's time to take 2, brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take 2!
The 2020 Tokyo Summer Olympics have officially been postponed. They are likely to be rescheduled sometime in 2021.
Hey, seems about right. I mean, I know. I thought I was getting ready to jump on the mic. They told me I was going to have to play the role of Mora, but Brenna was there.
I got you guys.
Yeah, nice.
That a girl. It's not a big surprise, right? Basically, anything you that has been scheduled at any point this year, for any reason, is being postponed or canceled or pushed back. So it's not a big surprise. I think it's the responsible thing to do. It's a bummer. Obviously, it's a huge bummer for those athletes that have put in the training to time themselves to peak at this particular time of year and be ready to compete at that level. But, you know, it's not a big surprise.
Yeah, well, and I like that it comes along with the news that they're going to try to do something in 2021. Because, you know, it's like I was saying with the baseball season. I hope that – I know that there's lots of logistics and everything that need to get, you know, put in place and everything. But I just hope that they're able to be nimble about it, you know. Just, like, let's make a quick decision. Let's get it done and get, you know, everything back to normal as fast as they can. So I love seeing that that they are going to go ahead and reschedule it sometime in 2021.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too, Dave.
The Panthers have signed XFL quarterback.
Just power through it, man.
Seahawks and Cardinals.
When you get interrupted, just power through it.
Did you hear the second one? The Panthers have signed XFL quarterback PJ Walker. Seahawks and Cardinals obviously shown interest in him as well. Did you catch that, Jim? Or are you too busy laughing? Where are you at?
No, I'm with you, Bob. I'm with you, Dave. PJ Walker. I mean, the Seahawks went down there to check him out. I like the idea of signing him as a backup quarterback, and it seemed to maybe be an upgrade over Geno Smith, but that's not going to happen now, clearly, with Carolina signing him. But we'll see. I mean, as it goes on, as Russell Wilson gets farther into his 30s, he's 31 now, I think it's going to be more and more important to get a better backup quarterback. We know we haven't had to use one here in Seattle since Russell got here, but that's going to change at some point. So they're going to have to look in a different direction now. Maybe they'll bring Geno Smith back.
Yeah, at this point, how many teams have a backup quarterback behind a franchise quarterback that you feel like if that franchise quarterback goes out, we're going to be fine? I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't matter who's in this spot, but I'm just saying it kind of doesn't matter because if Russell goes down, I don't care if it's PJ Walker. I don't care if it's Geno Smith. I don't care if it's anybody else. They've Brent Hundley. Name a backup that's been here. Your season's over. I mean, with all due respect to the rest of the team, this team is driven by Russell Wilson. And if he's not there at this point in his career, I don't know that it matters a ton, unless we're just talking about a short, you know, one game stretch. But if a backup has to take over for any lengthy period of time, it's going to go downhill.
Yeah, and it's been that way in the NFL for quite a while. I remember, you know, a few years ago when Matt Hasselbeck was the best backup quarterback. Last year, you know, and there's usually only one or two. And same thing as last year, it was Teddy Bridgewater. So, yeah, the backup quarterback situation is always going to be tough to find the right guy. I saw Arizona, by the way, last thing, signed Brett Hundley back. So he ended up being pretty good for them.
All right, coming up, we're going to check in with
comments we're getting here, Bob.
No, I don't.
Break.
Look at him doing a break. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. By the way, we're going to check in with Ryan Divish on how his social distancing is going. He's also a guy who's been in practice with that for a long time. So we may talk some baseball with him as well. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and More here on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and it's at the right price. It's free and very convenient for what's going on these days. And a pleasure to speak to this guy who's been practicing social distancing for the majority of his life, I would assume. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, covers the M's for the Seattle Times. Our buddy Ryan Divish is here. Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm many feet away from everybody every day of my life. So, I mean, you walk the social distancing, but this is a guy that takes a bath in Purell every day, so I don't know that you can mock anyone for that.
Yes, but once I'm clean, Ryan, I feel okay being around people. I'm fine at that point. It's just I have to be clean. Hey, what do you do before we get into what's going on with the M's and what's not going on with the M's? What are you doing with your weekends now? How much has your life changed at this point?
So I'm still in Arizona. I didn't come back yet from training. The place we rent down here, you know, it's kind of locked in till you have to prepay. And so they said I could stay down here. You know, there's still a few players down here, so I tried to hook up with some of them. It hasn't been very successful, but it's also 75 and sunny here. So I figured I'd stay down here, and then I'm going to drive back instead of fly back.
So I just kind of been working from home. Mariners have been really good. Their PR staff, as always, has been really good about getting us on conference calls with some guys. And I've just did some phone interviews with a few other guys, trying to build up some interviews and stuff like that and come up with ideas to do stories on. On Sunday we did our, I came up with the idea of, the Seattle Times Sports Department Book Club, and we put out a bunch of our favorite sports books that we've read and offering people a way to truly cut the cord and read a book, which is a good thing. And so that was kind of my pet project. So I went through and did that, kind of got everybody to send in their books and write a little blurb on it and stuff like that. So just trying to stay busy. I mean, at least down here in Arizona, it's warm. So I was able to run or go hiking most days for an hour or so and stay outside.
Divish, what are the players doing? I see it sounds like they're in like off season mode. So, what kind of training? What are they up to?
Yeah, I think their off season mode and our off season mode are a little different. I just hit the total wine yesterday for Crown Royal, so I don't think they're doing that. But mostly like lifting and running, from what I can tell. You know, they sent home most of the players. Before they left, took home like a lot of resistance bands and weights, and a lot of them have weights at their own places. So they're just doing a lot of full body work, lifting, running. The pitchers are throwing, a lot of them are just throwing against a wall, or if they have somebody that's close by they can play catch with, they play catch. But for the most part, yeah, they're not doing anything like throwing off a mound or hitting in cages or anything like that. They're all just kind of working out and trying to stay in shape. And that's the longer this goes on and that's all they can do, I just think that puts baseball in a pretty precarious position.
Hey, Ryan, I was a little surprised that the Mariners, I think it was over the weekend or maybe last Friday, released Sam Tuivailala. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but he seemed to have some promise, and maybe it was just injuries got the best of him.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, Jim. I mean, like, I didn't think he was going to make the club on opening day. I thought he was going to start the season on the injured list. He came into camp with kind of some shoulder fatigue and an impingement kind of in his shoulder, and just wasn't kind of responding to treatment. And then he got out and he pitched in a sim game with, I think, that was the day Taiwan was pitching. And his fastball was topping out at like 87 miles an hour. And 2 years ago, he was topping out at 97. And I had multiple scouts who were there watching, asking if he was still hurt. And they think there's something wrong in there. I think it's just not coming back. I mean, the velocity last year was only 93. The Mariners thought that with an offseason, a normal offseason where he wasn't rehabbing from an Achilles injury, that it would come back. But it just hasn't. And it's 88 is a problem.
Hey, Ryan, did you changing the subject for a moment, did you get a chance to spend much time talking with either D. Gordon or Kyle Seager, two of the veterans on this team who don't appear to be part of the future at all? In fact, we hear their names, Kyle more than D, come up in trade scenarios and things like that. I'm just wondering how they approach a season like this where they seem to be potential trade bait on some levels, and they're also facing a season that's all about the youth, all about developing the young guys on this roster.
I mean, I think there are two different spots in two different situations. Kyle's got a job. I mean, he's got his starting third base job, and he's locked in there. I mean, he has more trade value than D. He also has the kind of weird little poison pill in his contract that changes his club option to a player option if he's traded. But I think he can kind of embrace what he has. He can go out there. And if he puts up really good numbers and plays well, then he probably will get traded, because the third baseman market was so high this offseason that a lot of teams like the Braves and the Nationals didn't get to address their third base spot because Josh Donaldson got $90 million, which nobody thought he was going to get, and Anthony Rendon got $200 million. So those teams still need a third baseman, and they were going to try and start the season with kind of stopgap players in place. But if Kyle had played really well, I think he was certainly going to be traded. Whereas D doesn't have a starting spot. I mean, Shed Long was given the starting second base job this offseason. D is going to play as a backup. And it's hard to build your value up when you're only going to play sparingly. And how do you stay in kind of a rhythm and all of that. So, I mean, I think both players would like to be traded. And it's not like they're lobbying or they're demanding it, but, you know, like with Seager, he would love to go to a team that has a chance to contend. And same with D would love to go to a place where he has a chance to play every day. And so I think in that way, the Mariners are motivated to move them, and there are teams that might have some value in them. But, you know, right now with a shortened season and everything else, I don't know how that's going to work. Like, are those guys going to be able to play enough games to trade them, or are we going to see a rash of injuries because everybody's sitting out? And maybe that's how you move them. But the Mariners would love to trade both players, and both players would love to be traded. It's just finding the right thing.
Divish, who, when everything came to a screeching halt, who do you think did themselves the most good as far as spring training goes? What player?
That's a good question. So there's this kid named Joey Gerber. He's a pitcher. He pitched for AA last year. He was drafted out in Illinois, and he's kind of this goofy looking kid. He walks kind of really pigeon toed with his butt sticking out, and like, he doesn't like punters and kickers. A lot of times you don't consider pitchers athletes, and you look at this kid, you don't think he's very athletic, but he throws 96. He's got a pretty good slider, and it's got this weird spin rate. It just kind of gets up on top of you. And I don't think he'd allowed a run in four or five appearances. And I think one of the reasons they were able to release Tui Valala completely and not even put him on the injured list is because somebody like him was going to make the team and they needed that 40-man roster spot. So I thought he helped himself a ton. I thought Evan White helped himself in terms of just providing the Mariners reassurance that he's going to be able to handle being a starting first baseman. He was so good defensively. It's just ridiculous watching him play around first base. Like, I mean, I grew up really idolizing Mark Grace, and Mark Grace is one of the best defensive first basemen ever, and that's what Evan White looks like over there. And he hit the ball hard every time. So I think those are two guys that really helped themselves.
Hey, Ryan, it was a year ago today that Ichiro had his final appearance in the major leagues, and appropriate that it was in Japan. What's it been like having him I don't even know what his status is, but it appears that he's a full-time coach. Is that something that you think will continue this year?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he's coaching more than like being a mascot a couple years ago, you know. It was basically when he was like the special assistant of the chairman, and he took BP and everything, basically acted like a player until the game started. Now he's actually throwing BP and hitting grounders and hitting fly balls and working with guys and things like that. I don't know what his commitment is going to be a manager someday or anything like that. We always kind of joke that he would manage the Japanese team in the 2020 Olympics, but those are going to be postponed. I don't know what his real goal is. If I made as much money as he did, I don't know that I would be hanging out and hitting fly balls and hanging out in Peoria, Arizona all the time. I think I could find better things to do with my time, but you know, he's always been a different cat. I mean, it is amazing to think that was a year ago, how much everything has changed. I mean, today, you know, this is technically the second of the last day of where we've been spring training. You know, the Mariners would have played their final game of spring training tomorrow, and then 2 days from now would have started on Thursday would have started the season. And it just feels like baseball is months and months away from ever happening.
Hey, Ryan, we appreciate you taking time out of the sunshine and talking a little baseball with us. Enjoy your time out there. Continue with the social distancing, and we'll catch up soon, my friend. Thank you.
I have to drive back tomorrow, so I'm going to have to be back where it's rainy and cold. I've been offering up my house sitting services to people down here, but they just don't want to take it. So.
We appreciate it, man. Safe travels.
All right, see you guys.
There you go. Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times with us every week talking Mariners on his way back from spring training, the spring training that wasn't. Meanwhile, Dave Wyman was one of the many that were watching old NFL games this weekend to get his sports fix, and he noticed some things in the Steelers-Seahawks game from last year. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
All right, I guess we are not hearing Bob right now. He's having a little bit of technical difficulties. Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and More. And as Bob teased, and oh, by the way, Jim, it's just you and I, so... our guy, Taylor Jacobs, who runs all the media stuff there at the station, asked me to tease this. Go to 710 ESPN, at 710 ESPN Twitter. Get on the tweeter. And what I have done is I took pictures of things that are on my desk. You can see it there on the front page. And so what I did is I took like a zoom-in shot first, and then I kind of slowly pulled back, and then people are going to have a contest, I guess, to guess what it is on my desk. So, yeah, that's kind of what we've gotten to now. Yeah, boring things like tweeting out what's on my desk, Jim.
Well, can you give us a hint? Is it something from your playing days? Is it something Seahawks-related?
No hints, man. No hints.
Okay.
Just got to figure it out. Yeah. Anyway, as Bob teased, I was watching, I don't know why, they put on the NFL Network, they put on the game between Pittsburgh and Seattle this year. Seahawks traveled out there, and that was the game where, and they went 7-1 on the road this year. And, you know, it's pretty amazing what they were able to get done. And so anyway, that was the game where they all got on the early bus because it was a 3-hour time difference deal. So, you know, they had to get that figured out, and they did. And it ended up being like a winning formula. But a few of the things from that game I noticed, one was Russell got sacked 4 times and 3 times in the first half, one of which he almost got killed by TJ Watt. He ran like a stunt on him. And in both of those situations, Fluker didn't do a very good job picking up the stunt. And then there was a couple of times where he was just beaten soundly by Stephon Tuitt. So, you know, but Russ gets sacked, you know, 3 times in the first half and is able to come back from that and have what ended up being a historic performance. Brent Stecker and I did a thing on Football 101 afterwards just because Russ was 29 for 35. So that ends up being 83%, and that's his career high in a game. But, you know, it's easy to – well, I won't say it's easy. It's not that easy to be 83% completion percentage or above, but it's a lot easier if you're throwing 20, 22, 23 passes a game. But he actually threw 35 in that. He went 29 for 35 and 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. So we plugged those parameters in and found out that he's one of 8 guys in NFL history to have, you know, 83% or higher and 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. And actually, Brent took it a step further. He's one of 3 guys to do it on the road. So he had a great game in spite of that, but it also looked to me like, yeah, maybe we need to spend, and the Seahawks are, they're up to, what, 4 signings now with Shell and Finney and, you know, the other signings that they've had for offensive linemen, Chance Warmack, and then the Agwebe, or I'm butchering that name, but, you know, maybe that's something that they should, yeah. So, you know, something that I know you've talked about, Jim, that they need to spend a little bit more time, and that's what they are doing, trying to get, you know, get some protection for Russell Wilson.
Well, I'll tell you what was crazy about that game, Dave, and when you bring it up, I'm thinking, I mean, it's hard to believe because he was, what, 29 for 35, 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. But as I recall, it was most of those sacks might have been in the first series, or it was the first 2 or 3 series anyway. And so at that point, it just looked like no one was blocking. He was just getting completely overrun. And if you had said at that point, hey, you know what, just hang in there because he's going to be 29 or 35 at the end of this game, you would have said, well, there's no way that's going to happen. And if you had said he's going to get sacked 10 times this game, you would have believed that more than the numbers that he posted in that game. And they ended up winning 28-26.
Yeah, you know, and it was just there was a couple of penalties, and I know one wiped out what would have been a 43-yard catch and run by Will Disley. And it was a halt by Jermaine Ifedi. So, you know, he had a few penalties. He didn't have a great game, but they ended up, you know, coming back as a team. But, yeah, that's one thing that stood out. The other that stood out to me was that, you know, I liked LJ Collier actually played well. I mean, he didn't make plays, but, you know, just seeing him out there and just the burst and explosion and get off the ball, he actually forced a holding penalty. He kind of stood out to me, and it just kind of made me think about, you know, why the Seahawks were so reluctant to play young guys last year, and I felt like that was the thing that kind of held him back. And same thing with, you know, Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair, that I wish they'd have played those guys a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you in hindsight, looking back, and it wasn't typical of Pete Carroll to do that, and I think he was even second-guessing himself at the end of the year. And in that game, the Seahawks benefited from Roethlisberger getting hurt just before halftime, but still, Mason Rudolph, that was one of his better games of the year. He threw, 12 for 19, two touchdowns. He did throw one pick, and the other part of it that stands out, just looking at the box score here, it was one of Seattle's best efforts against the run. Usually you look at that Pittsburgh running game and it's hard to stop, but the Seahawks only allowed 81 yards on the ground that day. And so it was a nice win there on the road, and you know, to beat Cincinnati the first week by 1 point, and then to come back and get a 2-point win on the road at Pittsburgh. And then, as you pointed out, just a fantastic year on the road, going 7-1, just losing to the Rams in LA, their only setback.
Well, we'll talk about the Rams. We'll talk about their new logo. We'll get into what the Seahawks have done with their acquisition for a fifth-round pick. Get into all of that with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.